Birth, Chapter 2. "I like the way you say shifting," Yuki said as she brushed her little white hand across Dick's bare arm as it rested on his car windowsill. She was bouncing from car to car, trying to give the streaming audience an introduction to all the drivers and all the cars. Pasadena was always a car town. Songs were written about it. The whole culture of America seemed to revolve around the automobile for two generations. And this street, Colorado Boulevard, was the iconic strip of straight asphalt and stoplights that seemed to embody the entire art. Yuki was part of the new generation of fans who believed there is a substitute for cubic inch. That is to say, size does not necessarily matter. She was small at just 4'11" and barely 90 pounds, but she was no trifle in the underground racing industry. She had started a business with the perfect match between three high-energy phenomena. Part of her business was online gambling, hooking thousands of high-rolling people from all over the world who liked to bet on just about anything. Part of it was the high-tech camera business, with cameras mounted on the car, in the car, on the driver, and even in the air with zippy little drones that could follow a car up to 140 miles an hour. She took the audience along for the ride of their lives. The final ingredient of Yuki's online gambling racing empire was that the cars were real. The drivers were real. The streets and the dangers of pedestrians, other cars, and police were real. The money these drivers competed for was real, and it attracted the best of the best from all around the world to compete. The tension was surreal as these little cars with one, two, or three turbochargers sucked in cold California air and crunched it up to three atmospheres, mixed with high-octane fuel or various blends of alcohol, and shoved it into a combustion chamber where it would convert an engine designed for high-mileage commuting into a screaming computer-chipped monster that spits asphalt out the back of a car. All of these racers liked their lives and their music a certain way, loud and dangerous. It was sexy and extremely profitable. It was also highly illegal and a target of a multi-agency investigation to bust the drivers, the gamblers, and the little girl who ran it all. Yuki had a headset mic with an earpiece that allowed her to stay connected to the central hacker. Kramer is called the hacker because he was a hacker. As a middle schooler, he cracked his way into the California State DOT and made the headlines doing so. He was a minor, so did little time in the juvenile court system, but their probation terms were brutal. No internet, no association with other hackers, and no computer access until he was 21. Okay, he was 21. He could do as he pleased, and what pleased him was to associate with his best friend, Dick Daring. He learned to write fuel management code for the systems that utilize high-compression turbochargers attached to motors that had no business being turbocharged. He also knew how to hack the highway traffic control systems and alter the lighting and flow of traffic. And in a little chat window on the side of his screen, he would send and monitor the laptop tech screens of Pasadena police cars. These were essential skills for a person in charge of mapping and facilitating a street race. The lights along the race are turned to green. The police cars are slowly, meticulously sent messages that lead the police cars far away from the race's roadway. Dispatch calls to the cars are monitored by teammates who alert the central command of any possible complaints or calls for pursuit. The race would only last for 3 or 4 minutes anyway. In that amount of time, the cars could cover 6 miles or more, making it nearly impossible for any type of roadblock to be set up. They had been racing for nearly 2 years, and except for a harmless crash or two, the business was going great and ready for franchising. There were spotters who were positioned around the race circuit to report by radio any crashes, stalls, or possible police interruptions. Other team members would contact thousands of gamblers across the globe and let them know the time, but never the place of the race. The FBI was monitoring these networks as well. They might even be posing as gamblers. They knew the time, but they never knew the place or the route of the race. As the evening grew into night and the pool of global cash grew in an intensity only equal to watching a new kind of bomb detonate on live TV, the cars arrived in the Pasadena City College parking lot. Some were dark and low to the ground, humming with nearly open pipes to make way for the ultra-compressed fuel and air that would be roaring through its custom stainless steel exhaust systems. Others were nearly stock-looking on the outside. Sleepers, quiet and unassuming, they acted like stealth racers. They looked like the neighbor's car, but once the throttle was pressed forward toward the grill, the turbos would kick in, and more than 1,000 horsepower would seek to rip the rubber off the front rims, yanking the car forward against its will to speeds greater than 140 miles an hour. Many a Lamborghini had been sent home crying while attempting to paddle shift past one of these little rocket ships. Daring's car was a glistening black Honda. Okay, he liked American muscle more than anything. But for this type of racing, the car had to be like a cart. It had to be light, agile, and yet be able to hold onto a power plant that was trying to leap through the front grill. It required special engineering and high-strength steel and carbon fiber. It required special fuel laced with an octane coupled with high-strength magnets along the coiled fuel lines to upgrade the combustion reaction. It required a dynamic chip code that altered the fuel mixture every 50 RPM, giving the cylinder everything it could possibly contain before exploding and then exiting through the highly polished exhaust valves and around the blades of the turbocharger that would make it go even faster. It was like an uncontrolled chain reaction all the way to 12,000 RPM, generating more horsepower than the two-wheel dyno at the college could measure. It was faster than a twin-engine go-kart. Yuki's little Catholic school skirt flipped precociously as she bounced in front of the shoulder camera held by one of her crew. Okay, racers and fans, I hope your wagers are all locked in. We are only minutes away from the green hanky. Yeah, too bad there is no American muscle here tonight. That will be fun, yelled Dick out his car window at Yuki. I like the way you say muscle, she twerked as she skipped along in front of the cars now lining up. She waved a green scarf in front of the camera and spun around like a little dervish, intoxicating her global fan base. She acted like she could hear the applause from thousands of men sitting in their underwear, cheering at their computer screens or tablets as she locked her eyes with each of theirs through the camera's lens directly to their souls. The look was long enough to make the heart race, but short enough to make you reach for the screen to touch her just for a moment. Her dark eyes were enhanced with perfect makeup, and the camera light made them shine like onyx against her porcelain skin, framed by recently trimmed jet black bangs and long flowing silk sheets of hair that reached past the bottom of her white schoolgirl blouse tucked into the very short blue plaid skirt. They couldn't help themselves, the men. They bet sometimes thousands of dollars on a car or two they thought might win the night's totally illegal competition, but it was the illegal fantasies they had about Yuki that made her business the richest of its kind in the world. No one could duplicate what she had built. They knew the time. They just didn't know the place.